You're listening to Atheistically Speaking.
Hello and welcome to Atheistically Speaking. This is episode 253 and I'm your host, Thomas Smith. Okay, well, this is interesting. So I had a debate between Eli Bosnick and a listener named Travis, and I'm still going to definitely air that, but this has almost been preempted by some news that I'm finding too fascinating and relevant to ignore. I really am. Not to mention the fact that it's in Sacramento. It's literally mere miles from where I'm recording from right now. So this is really interesting. So you may see it on Google News. You may have already seen it. Seven injured, I think like five stabbed, maybe more like 10 beaten at the Capitol. And this is so fascinating because what you see, if you just scan this, if you just kind of take a glimpse at these news stories, what you see is, oh, neo-Nazis, rally, stabbings. You think, oh, okay, some neo-Nazis must have just stabbed some people. I'm looking into this. I've prepared a couple audio clips that I've got for you guys. And this is kind of scaring me a little bit because there's this so-called, there's these anti-fascist groups, and they've taken it upon themselves to physically, by violence, actually, stop what is a legal protest. And this is a scary situation because I look at this story and it now looks like the neo-Nazis retaliated. And, you know, who knows? It's very difficult to know the ins and outs of everything that happened. But from what I'm gathering and what I'm going to share with you, it looks like so the neo-Nazi groups, and they're actually not, I don't know if they all identify as that. I think it's a couple different groups. One of them's like the workers something. They always have names that aren't exactly neo-Nazi, but they've been labeled as such. They are, I think, officially a hate group, but they have a permit. They had a permit to do a protest. There's 10 people in this group. This is a group of 10 neo-Nazis who are obviously wrong. That's not in question. They're obviously wrong in their views. But this is 10 neo-Nazis who want to have a protest, got a permit to have a rally at the Capitol. They got the permit. The police were there to ensure that they could demonstrate. So this is a group of 10 people, the neo-Nazis. By all accounts, this is 10 people. A group of 200 to 300 anti-fascists, so-called anti-fascists, came to stop this, and they decided to stop it by any means. I'm going to first play you a clip of someone who seems to be some sort of spokesman for, or spokeswoman, I don't know if that is the right term, but she's a spokesperson for the anti-fascist group. Listen to what she says. This is her own words. This is, and I'm finding this shocking, so I wonder if you will as well.
No, it's important for anyone who's thinking about joining racist genocide and a racist genocide organization like the Nazi groups that were holding this, that they're not welcome. And if they trip and fall in the process of that, good. They need to go.
Is there anything?
And we succeeded in driving them out.
So it seems like you're very happy with the overall come out. Is there anything you might have changed? I mean, five people, from what we heard, at least five did get stabbed, part of the counter-protest group, which would be your side.
And we are really glad to say that the people who were injured did not sustain life-threatening injuries, and we do have people who are, you know, making sure that they're getting taken care of and that they have people who are taking care of them. What this means, though, but I feel like all of us, from that, all it did was fuel our determination to keep this movement going and fight even harder, which is what we did after that. The Nazis, a couple of them, tried to come out on the steps for about 20 seconds, and they were driven out and were just had to be scurried back into the building, and then they had to cancel the entire event. And so, you know, this is that, but that's why the Nazis are dangerous, and that's why we need to take them on directly, take them on head on, confront them, but with as many people as possible prepared to shut them down. And that is what this demonstration did today.
Absolutely outrageous and scandalous that the cops were out here. They never should have gotten a permit to begin with, and that the police were out here protecting them. One of our main chances, cops and the Klan go hand in hand, because we know in the end the police are out here to back them up. That's ridiculous. At the same time, I have to say that that did not stop us from achieving our goal, which was to shut them down, which we did anyway.
I'm at a loss with this. I can't imagine that my listeners, that people that I would consider on the left, most of you and me too, I can't imagine you would agree with her. But maybe I'm wrong. I mean, maybe this is, I don't know. I don't know how extensive that viewpoint is. But holy shit. I mean, why? She's puzzled as to why the police were out there protecting a group of 10 people who had a permit to be there, protecting them against an angry mob of 200 to 300. She's confused about that. Should they have just not been there? Should they have said, no, sorry, we're not going to protect you at all? I know it's our job to protect people and to kind of be neutral in these things, but, and you have a permit, but yeah, sorry, we're just going to let this mob just pelt you with stones, which is what they did. I guess this is the regressive left that people have been complaining about, that Ruben's been complaining about. This very well may be it. I guess this is it. Now, I think that I don't need to sit here and invite a neo-Nazi on to express his point of view, though, in order to say that this is wrong. I mean, it is wrong to bring a group of so-called anti-fascists who actually turn out to be the fascists in this situation, to bring them there to literally, as your mission statement, have your plan be to stop a legal protest. You are not going to. This is 10 people. I would not have heard about this. I would have no idea. I live in this city. I would have no idea that this happened if these 10 neo-Nazis had just done their little thing on the steps of the Capitol. I would have no idea if it weren't for the counter-protest. I think it's fine to counter-protest. I don't mean to say you shouldn't do that, but they literally came out there and admitted as much that their goal was to stop by force. They had sticks and blocks of concrete that they broke up, and there's video of it. They're throwing concrete pelts at these neo-Nazis as they come out of the Capitol to try to go on the steps to hold their rally. I'm floored by this. Now, okay, I should caveat this by saying all these details are preliminary. I've seen a lot of video on it. I've kind of made some judgments. Now, this could change if more details come out. But, and it is true that the stabbing victims, as of now, the best knowledge I have is that I think like 4 or 5 were on the counter protest side, and 1 or 2 were on the neo-Nazi side. So it does sound like the neo-Nazis were the ones who ended up stabbing people more. But you can see in the video what happened first is these two guys are trying to walk out of the Capitol and they're bleeding. They have been hit in the head with pieces of concrete. I don't know that I can say, I warn you, this could sound like a controversial opinion. I don't know that it would be entirely unreasonable to think that your life is being threatened in that situation. If you're being beaten with sticks, which I'm going to play a small clip of that too, you can hear it. Boy, this is a really horrible situation. Listen to this.
Fuck fascists! Beat the fascists! Beat the...
That's him saying, beat the fascists, and they're going around beating people with sticks as the neo-Nazis are running around. I'll be honest, if you throw concrete at a group of 10 people and you're a group of 200 to 300 and you run around and chase them and beat them with sticks and you say beat fascists and fuck fascists, if they stab you in self-defense, I really think that might be on you. I really think it is. That is, it sounds like they brought knives, and so maybe it was a case of, you know, bring knives to a stick fight or bring sticks to a knife fight, something like that, but... Wow, I don't know. I mean, this is all subject to change if somehow I find out I'm wrong on these details. But I've seen video, firsthand video, that was very preliminary before anyone was kind of making any judgments on this. And this is what I'm seeing. This is not right. I mean, it is not the correct thing to do. It is not the right thing to do. It is not the even the practically effective thing to do to take a group of 200 to 300 to a 10-person moron thing. Like it's 10 people. It's 10 white supremacists. Yeah, if you want to go hold signs and say like, ah, you're wrong. You know, you're assholes. Hold those signs. Sure. It's 10 people. You know how like you could find 10 people who believe anything. Do you think we're going to get to a point in this country or at any time in human civilization where we can stop 10 people from having an absolutely horrible point of view? Like, I just don't. I think this is going too far, is what I mean to say. This the expectations of these anti-fascist groups are too high. Once again, I have to say, I would never have heard about this. If they hadn't gone there and been violent, if the leftist group hadn't gone and been violent and shut down a legal protest with violence, literally using violence to shut down a legal protest, I would never have heard about these neo-Nazis. Now, I'm someone who's not at all susceptible to that point of view. This doesn't lead me to conclude that I need to reconsider what the neo-Nazis are saying. Not at all. I think this is a case of, you know, neo-Nazis being 100% wrong in what they think, but actually being within their rights to protest here, and some people on the far left who probably have the correct point of view when it comes to race and stuff like that, who are wrong about free speech. That's what I see. But I don't know. I mean, this gets the white supremacist group in the news. This is 10 people. Again, maybe if it were more, if the numbers were reversed, if this were 200 to 300 white power you know, protesters or whatever, like that kind of group, and you have a group of 10 people, obviously you still shouldn't invite violence. It doesn't make any sense. But it would be a different story. It would be something where I could see, yeah, you want to protest that, you want to do your best to make sure that your voice is heard. But really, I mean, this is 10 people. This would have been any other Sunday. No one would have cared. That, just to give you some idea, I drive by the Capitol. There are people who are at all times, more than 10, actually. I would say it's around 10-ish, 10 to 12. They're always right outside the Capitol. I drive by them all the time. Who are holding signs saying that Bush did 9-11. There's these 9-11 truthers that hold these signs about how everything was a false flag and whatever. You know how offensive that is? That's incredibly offensive. They're there all the time. But it doesn't, I mean, it's stupid ideas. There's no reason to beat them with sticks. It's just not, it's this such a small thing. It's kind of scary. I think this is, this may be regressive left. I think it's important. Now, I'm not going to have a neo-Nazi on to talk about neo-Nazism. It's not an idea, you know, it's not an idea that's worth even talking about. There are plenty of ideas that are. I'm here to talk about all kinds of ideas, except when you talk about we shouldn't have race mixing and stuff like that. I mean, I'm just not interested. I think I know the conclusion. You can sue me for that if you want. If you really think this should be the show where we invite, you know, racists on to say, yeah, I was having this protest and here's what my beliefs are. I don't think that's necessary. I don't think that is not at all necessary in order to say these anti-fascist groups, these leftist groups were wrong in this case. It's not necessary in order to say that. So that's my view on that. Let me know what you think. We'll see if more details come in, but boy, this does not look good for these leftist groups. It really doesn't. That woman, in her own words, that astounds me. All right, I may come back to this later, depending on what you guys think, and maybe as it makes the rounds. I haven't seen anyone reacting to this yet, so we'll see. Tomorrow may be another story when you're hearing this. But at any rate, give me your comments. And with that said, let's get to a very interesting debate between Eli Bosnick and a listener named Travis about gun control. So sorry for the awkward start with the rough news there, but let's get over to that debate. It was very interesting, and it was good to get two sides on this. I'm curious to hear what you guys think. All right, joining me is someone who needs no introduction, and that's Eli. So Eli, shut up. Don't even, because if I let you start talking, I'll never get you to stop. I'm just kidding.
9-11.
So, Joining me is Eli, and then someone who does need an introduction, Travis. How are you doing, Travis?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good, Thomas. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm glad to have you guys both on. We sort of hooked up via Facebook. I really wanted to get some sort of debate going about gun control, because I've actually noticed, you know, Travis, you're just saying most atheists you know are anti-gun in your experience. I think that might be true, but my view is it might not be as true as you think, because I've gotten a lot of people kind of on the, if not pro-gun, they're not as anti-gun as maybe Eli. So I think we're going to still get a good representation here of the two different views. Having said that, Travis, what are your, give me a quick highlight of how you found the show, how long you've been an atheist, that sort of thing, so we know you a little bit better.
Well, I think I've been an atheist most of my life. I grew up in a mixed religion household, so my mother was Jewish and my father was Protestant. And I think a lot of the times when you come from a family with mixed religions, you kind of start looking at the problem like, you know, they can't both be right. and I think that was one of the lines of questioning that led me to where I was today. Now, I haven't been as vocal or, I guess, active until recently. And that only started maybe a matter of years ago. But then I met, you know, in a class I was taking, a louder atheist, and he's one of the smartest guys I ever met. I won't name him here, but the dude had like a PhD in astrology, and he's a really smart
astrology.
Guy.
Astrology? Yeah. You mean astronomy?
Astronomy.
That's what I meant. Okay, no, that's just a big
difference. We can edit this, right?
Oh my God, Virgos, you guys never believe in God. Like a Virgo? Are you serious? Well, I'm a Capricorn, so I'm super skeptical of gods.
Yeah, that's okay. That's okay. It's just a
but
big difference.
And just shit on astrology.
The podcast thing, and, you know, like I started listening to it to a few of the big ones, and eventually found all the other ones through it. And I would say definitely that the podcasts were a big help in getting my views out there and developing my views.
Cool. Yeah,
and
good to hear.
You're part of that, so I thank you both for that.
Awesome. Hey, that's great to hear. We can definitely, Eli and I think both can feel a little bit of pride of having helped you out a little bit. I don't know. We'll see. And then we'll have this big debate and hopefully we'll be throwing stuff at each other. I don't know. Well, no.
That makes sense. And which is hard to do over Skype. So
yeah.
I'll just be impressed.
I'm going to try. I'm going to throw some New York pizza right back at Eli's face and tell him it's garbage. And then he can.
Just for clarity, you do like me more than Tom and Cecil, right? Because I felt like you weren't super clear with them when they were on the show. Dude, like, get it.
The funny thing is they were like doing the same thing where they're like, oh man, you're all about Eli, right? Like you can't. Yeah, it's awesome. So I'm going to keep you all in suspense.
Choose.
So, okay, let's get going. Let's say I figured my personal feeling was that Eli should go first because you're staking out a strong anti-gun kind of position that I think is the more bold position. So I thought it would be appropriate if you went first and then we'll see what Travis might want to say in response. Does that work?
Yeah, absolutely. So this conversation took place because I listened to the episode that you did on Orlando. And in it, you talked a little bit about guns. You talked a little about the sort of knee-jerk reactions that happen to not just Orlando, but that happen to all mass shootings, which is where people who don't know about guns start saying terms that they don't understand, like assault rifle and machine gun. Like they just don't know what those words mean. And you were sort of trying to navigate that. And knowing quite a bit about guns and having been on both sides of this argument at various times over the last few years, I was like, dude, we got to do an episode on guns. And you were like, we got to do a debate because it can't just be us shitting on guns.
So yeah, I'm a little too liable to agree with you. So that's why I wanted to do that.
So I posted a status about guns and my anti-gun views. And that sort of started a conversation. And Travis was actually a part of that. And based on that, we sort of decided to take it from there. But I basically what I would lay out is this. I think we have come to a point where in the United States, we need gun control the way Australia has gun control. We need gun control the way Britain has gun control. And what I'm hoping to do is go through some of the common fallacious objections that even atheists fall into when it comes to why we couldn't do those things, or more importantly, why it would be a bad idea to do those things. And I want to point out, to sort of be a little bit more empathetic, is that 2 years ago, I read, or however long ago that Sam Harris published The Riddle of the Gun, I read it and I was utterly convinced. I was utterly convinced by it. I also read FAQ on Violence, which was his follow-up, which sort of answered a lot of the objections that got brought up to that original article. And I was utterly convinced I was on a pro-gun side as far as Harris is pro-gun. And to be fair, he gets misrepresented all the time. I mean, he thinks that you should have the same amount of training as an airline pilot to have a gun, and then constant training ever since after that. So it wouldn't be fair to say that he's pro-gun the way Ted Nugent is pro-gun. But I was completely convinced onto that side of the issue. And then I spoke to Noah, who is obviously the head of my show on Scathing Atheist, and he really walked me through why a ton of those arguments don't work. So what I'm hoping to do today is either A, have Travis bring me back to the side where I was years ago or however many years ago when that piece came out, or B, point out some of the flaws that I didn't recognize in the argument and help some people see more clearly. Because the truth is, you know, and we talk about this a ton, and I think atheists talk about this a ton, is like the way that religious moderates bolster the extremist, I think that the gun moderate bolsters the gun extremist in a way that we need to start being responsible for.
That's interesting. Yeah, good point.
So this is where I'll sort of start with my first point. And this is what I put in my status, and Travis has seen this, so he's got sort of an awareness of it. And the first objection that sort of gets brought up is hunters. And, you know, what I said in the status is basically, I don't care about hunting. And the response that I got was a series of people who really, really cared about Inuits. And didn't I know that some people would starve and die if they weren't allowed to hunt? And if anything is made amazingly clear by the fact that there are people who would starve if they weren't allowed to hunt, it is that we should have other options for those people that are not guns. I mean, the proposition that seems to be made there is, we could go to those Inuits and be like, I mean, you guys do have guns. And they would just be like, yeah, that's fair. Or there's, you know, someone wrote, and I assume very genuinely, like, I'm not saying that this person was lying, but this person wrote, you don't know what it's like. I've run out on my front porch in the morning, seen a rabbit, and known I was going to eat for the day. And the answer to that person is, you deserve pasta. That argument is that if you don't catch the rabbit, if you're a shaky shot that day, you probably starve to death.
Yeah, your blood sugar's a little low from exactly. You haven't had a rabbit in a few months. So
if I had to hunt all my food, I would be dead. There would be easily another chubby Jew who reviews movies on this podcast right now. There's no way. Now, the second thing that comes up with hunters, and I think this is only fair, is that a lot of people brought up population control, et cetera, when it comes to hunting, and that licenses are really granted based on population control, and it's really heavily moderated. And the truth of the matter is that as we're going to get into just how dangerous it is to own a gun, even a hunting rifle, just the nature of gun ownership and the danger that comes with gun ownership, it's sort of like, and this isn't an apropos metaphor, but hopefully people will follow and forgive. It's sort of like there's an electric fence that we've discovered that's totally invisible and just totally controls deer population. They walk through it, zaps them, they die. It's great. It totally keeps control. But every 10 minutes or so, a toddler also walks through that fence and just gets fucking baked. And at a certain point, we have to say that as useful a tool is, guns are for controlling deer and boar and coyote populations, we as a society need to figure out better ways. And as it turns out, several societies have. The English managed to control their animal populations with very, very, very limited gun use. The Australians managed to control their animal populations, and they're just covered in lizards that are made out of poison and dragons and shit. And they also managed
totally
to control.
True. Every time I talk with Jake on his show, there's a different story of how he was almost eaten by some reptile that we can't even imagine.
They got a kangaroo that shoots spiders now. It's fucking crazy. That whole continent is – if anyone should – there's two countries that people should just leave. Australia and Israel. Everyone should just get up in the middle of the night and go. And then all their neighbors –
You were going to say there's two places that people should have a gun, and one of them is Australia, like to take on that spider-shooting kangaroo. I mean, that thing's
– you should have a gun oven mitted to your hand at all times. in Australia.
So just to clarify, and then maybe we'll give Travis a chance here. How far does this go for you? I mean, just no guns at all for any common American, like civilian. What about, police and stuff? Are they going to still have guns or?
Well, obviously, this is why the term gun ban is badly used the way the term assault rifle or machine gun is badly used, which mm-hmm. is, of course, police would still have guns. Of okay. course, private security officers would still have guns. There's still a tremendous amount of people in comparison with zero that would have guns. And you can look to Australia or England or anywhere several other places in the world to see what true gun control looks like, which is, again, as Sam Harris suggests, people who have such an extensive amount of training that the common usual dangers of gun ownership get eliminated. And the statistics do bear that out. So if anyone is thinking that if you wanted to go and get 500 hours of a range and be a mandated, mental health or you wanted to get mental wellness checks every so often, and that you needed to do a certain amount of shooting a year, and that you needed to keep your gun in the right place, and you needed to do checkups and this, that, and the other. The things that Sam has suggested. I'm not suggesting those people's guns be banned, but what I will touch on towards the end here is that even those people, when in the very few studies that we've done on those sort of people with high requirement concealed carry, even those people are more at danger of hurting themselves. It would just be within a acceptable threshold for me. So that my answer is a gun ban the way we have a gun ban in Australia and England.
Okay, well that's pretty critical because in Australia you still are allowed to own a gun. I got the idea from your status that you just wanted no guns at all. Like it's not legal in any way for a citizen to own a gun.
Yeah, I mean,
so you're saying as long, because in Australia there are a lot of rules. You have to have it kept in a place. You can get a random check where they can come exactly. to your house, and so you're cool with the Australia model, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, a little different than a full on gun ban, but okay. So Travis, what do you think? What are your thoughts on that so far?
So most of the positions that have been brought up are typically not ones that I would put out there, I guess. So it's a little bit harder for me to defend them. The starting point that I would like to come from would be that, in the liberal sense of things, if a technology exists, people are going to use it. And then, you have to kind of come up with a reason why they shouldn't use it or why they shouldn't possess that technology. So what I would, I guess, like to hear from Eli is, being that guns are a technology that exists and are available for sale, why shouldn't, the average American citizen be able to possess one?
I mean, if the question is, if a technology exists, shouldn't someone be able to use it?
Yeah, basically. I mean, you have to have a reason to prevent people from using it. If I invent something tomorrow and I start selling it, there has to be kind of a federal institution that comes in and says, hey, you can't do this anymore. There has to be a reason put up by the voter.
The answer is we do this with products all the time. We do this with jackhammers. We do this with vehicles. We do this with certain, high strength ovens. I mean, you would be hard pressed to find any kind of technology that possesses a tiny percentage of the mortality risk that a gun does that we don't have much more stringent control over. So the answer would be, we do this with technology all the time. We limit it based on on the dangerous nature of it. The chances of me murdering someone or myself with a, construction worker's jackhammer is incredibly rare. But there's still much, much more paperwork and licensing I would have to go through to own one. And that's a problem.
Okay, and that's really more of an argument for regulation than an argument for banning things altogether, am I right?
Right. Well, again, what I'm talking about is such an extreme form of regulation that it would amount to what most American citizens would consider a gun ban. If you talk about England or you talk about Australia, both of those countries obviously have certain amounts of gun allowance, but they are essentially gun-free countries. So, if what we're talking about is the destruction of a technology from the surface of the earth, I don't know anybody reasonable who's proposing that. It's certainly a lovely thought, but I don't know.
That's not what I'm suggesting. Basically, because it's something that's available for purchase commercially, and you know, it's regulated, it is currently regulated. What you're doing is you're talking about moving that regulation so far to the right where it becomes essentially impossible for the average citizen to own. And I want to know kind of what your reasoning for believing that, you know, that's a something that we should do.
Well, probably, I would base my reasoning on how based on how incredibly dangerous it's been statistically proven to own that piece of technology. I mean, every single study that you care to name shows that more gun ownership results in higher rates of suicide, higher rates of murder. I mean, flat out, more guns equal more dead people. So the reason why I want to move it farther to the right is because the countries that move those things farther to the right, countries that move those things into more controlled zones, see less murder, they see less crime, they see less suicide. All of those things go down, and in the name of public health, I think it's a good idea to reduce availability of objects that are only for harming oneself and others.
Okay, so this is an argument of essentially reducing certain limited freedoms under the basis of, you know, a marginal increase in public safety, correct?
I mean, not marginal by any means that we would consider. I mean, marginal
by a degree, I guess you could say.
Yeah, by a pretty significant degree. I mean, we regulate the size of breakfast cereal squares if they cause choking hazards. So to say that regulating gun control would, or by, to say that regulating guns would only be marginal is pretty disingenuous. I mean, we're talking tens of thousands, almost hundreds of thousands of gun deaths a year. We're talking 55 suicides a day. I mean, I've got stats upon stats upon stats. The degree to which it would marginally decrease murder, at least as been demonstrated by other countries that have done it, is certainly not anything that we wouldn't take on were it any other product. So, and the example I would give is this. If a certain amount of control, a special seatbelt, no matter how uncomfortable, were to be placed in all cars that were to lower car mortality rate by 10% or 20%, no matter how limiting that quote-unquote freedom of operating a vehicle was, I think within a certain margin of public safety and health, we would agree that it's acceptable.
So going off of that premise, let's talk a little bit about those gun deaths that you were mentioning. So if we were to look down a breakdown of, you know, those deaths attributed to gun violence, what categories do they fall under?
This is according to the BradyCampaign.org, and this is BradyCampaign.org/key gun violence statistics. And I will obviously.
So, Eli, this isn't just you're just grabbing this out of your ass. This is
actually a Yik Yak that I'm reading off of right now as we speak. I would like. So every day, 297 people in America are shot in murders, assaults, suicides, suicide attempts, unintentional shootings, and police intervention. 89 people die from gun violence a day. 31 are murdered, 55 kill themselves, 2 are killed unintentionally, 1 is killed by police intervention, and 1, the intent is unknown. Every day, 208 people are shot and survive. 151 are shot in an assault. 10 survive a suicide attempt, 45 are shot unintentionally, 2 are shot in a police intervention. In 1 year, on average, over 108,000 people in America are shot in murders, assaults, suicides, suicide attempts, unintentional shootings, or police intervention. So that's the kind of statistics that we're looking at there.
Okay, so the categories essentially break down to a few groupings, right? You have suicides being one. Murders being another, you know, perhaps gang violence or being, you know, an innocent bystander in some form of gang violence. And then perhaps something like terrorism, you know, maybe gets thrown in there, or hate crimes, you know, in the examples we see today, you know, in these days like Orlando, you know, these mass shootings that go after a particular group of people with the intent of sending a message. Would you agree that it by and large falls into those four categories?
It certainly does. The one thing that I would say is that one thing we need to acknowledge, and this is a trap that a lot of anti-gun advocates fall into pretty regularly, is that mass shootings are incredibly rare. the reason why mass shootings get attention is because they bring to our public attention once again that we hand out a machine that is only for killing other people way, way too indiscriminately in this country. So what we mostly see gun violence is private, legally owned gun ownership, or in the rare cases of illegal gun ownership, what we're usually seeing is gang activity, et cetera, et cetera.
And that's something that's interesting to talk about, too. I'll let you get back to it. But just to poke in for a second, maybe something that is a little frustrating is this is something we should be talking about all the time. The thing we do where because one thing is in the news for 10 seconds, we go, oh, shoot, let's talk about this. And then we all forget. The public forgets and then just kind of moves on. And that can be really frustrating. But when you think about it, because 89 people a day die from gun violence, you can't really sustain that news coverage, you know, and have, yeah, and sustain that in people's minds. So it's the mass shootings that are, you know, whatever, it's like once a month
sensationalized
now. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. To where everybody talks about it.
Well, the other thing to touch on that I think is important to recognize about why we don't get the quote unquote news coverage is that there is a tremendous amount of money to be made by making sure that the news coverage of the everyday gun death go, and I'm not talking 9/11 conspiracy here. I'm talking about the NRA has a concerted effort, and I recommend anyone look up the Dickey laws and the Dickey bills and everything that's coming. The NRA has made a concerted effort to make sure that we have as little information on the danger and deaths related to guns as possible. The fact that all of the information we have, and it's pretty extensive, that shows how dangerous it is to own a gun, how every possible defense we have, it doesn't play out when the numbers work. The fact is that most of that is not borne out by the CDC. Most of that has to be borne out by other agencies because, again, the NRA has so deeply, deeply handicapped the ability for the CDC to study gun violence. And John Oliver did an amazing bit on that on the nightly show or the weekly show, whatever he calls it.
Last Week Tonight.
Yeah. Last Week Tonight. Show. And I cannot recommend checking that enough just to see how it is very clearly, it has been and continues to be very clearly the goal of the NRA for us to have less information on guns rather than more.
Okay. I'm not going to deny any of that. And just for the record, I'm not an NRA member, nor will I ever donate money towards that organization for a plethora of reasons. But getting back to what we were discussing prior to talking about the media cycle and kind of the how gun death gets portrayed in the media, we were talking about how it broke down into those few categories. Now, what I want to ask you is, if guns were to be banned, are you assuming then that all of those deaths wouldn't take place? Those people wouldn't try to kill themselves by other means. The murderers wouldn't be murdering people with just, you know, a different tool, or the gang violence, which typically the guns used in those are possessed illicitly or illegally. Now, granted, a lot of them are purchased, you know, via straw purchases or over state lines, things like that. They have somebody go out and, you know, this guy buys one gun in this state and this guy buys one gun in one state. And this way, you know, it becomes harder to track. You're not sending one guy over to Virginia to buy 10 guns and then bringing them back. Even if it weren't, you know, if those that availability wasn't in place, you know, being able to do straw purchases, this is still an illicit network. This is still a demand that is in place, you know, the demand for gangs due to things, you know, socio-economical issues, drug sales, competition in an illicit drug sale market. That demand would still be there. And at some point, somebody would step in to service that demand. So, I mean, even if guns, I would make the argument that even if guns were banned across the United States, we still have, you know, many ports. And there's no way that ICE and CBP are going to check every single shipping container that comes through those ports. That's just an impossibility. And I point to, you know, the volume of drugs that comes into this country as an example of that. Weapons can do the same thing. So as long as there is a demand for those weapons, some external entity will be there to make money off of their sales. So in the sense of gang violence, I don't think that demand for those weapons will go away, nor will the availability of those weapons go away were they to be banned in the states alone. You can also get them through Mexico, which happens to have a stricter gun policy than the United States does. Now, they typically get more of their guns from the U.S. because of that, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the flow of arms can't operate in the reverse should our gun laws become stricter than theirs. You know, then you could easily move them through the tunnel networks or the semi-submersibles that they use to get drugs into this country, or human smuggling, or any of the other things that they bring through those networks. So on the gang side, I would say that because the demand nor the supply would go away, it wouldn't solve that issue. And when we talk about murders and suicides, you know, taking one available option to do that thing away wouldn't necessarily prevent those crimes from happening. Again, the intent is still there. You know, that that person wants to kill someone else, or that person wants to take their own life. Taking one tool away doesn't necessarily mean that that goes away. So when you cite a lot of these numbers of all these people that die a day on average, you know, you're under the assumption that if guns were not there for them to use, that none of these deaths would happen anyway. And I would say that not only would most of them happen, but where guns not available, you know, we're talking again by reducing those deaths by a diminished degree and not necessarily a statistically significant one. Now, I don't have, you know, stats here to back that up. But what I do have is that, you know, the intent doesn't go away and the availability of weapons doesn't go away, particularly with, you know, the gang violence. If I wanted to commit suicide with something else other than a gun, I could do that.
So the good news is I actually do have stats that completely disprove what you just said, which is, so if that were true, if what you said was true, that people who want to kill themselves will kill themselves anywhere, then it would be fair to say that statistics would bear that out. And the statistic especially that would bear that out was, would we would see houses with guns in them and houses without guns in them would have similar suicide rates, right? And that would prove to us that suicide was something that someone was just going to do anyway, whether or not they would have a gun.
Well, not necessarily. And I want to interject there for a second. You know, there's a lot of other demographic data that maybe is not accounted for in a study like that. So somebody who possesses a firearm might be, you know, more likely to be a service member. And, you know, maybe service members have a higher tendency for suicide than the regular civilian counterpart. And so that's not necessarily a factor. So, I mean, you know, what numbers may reflect in one case doesn't necessarily look at all the elements in the equation. You're just looking
at two fixed variables. I totally agree. But the claim that you've made is that people who are suicidal, servicemen or not, just people in general, right? People who are suicidal will find a way to kill themselves anyway. Now, if you want to disprove the Kellerman study, which is, you know, what I'm working off of, you're certainly more than welcome to do it. However, there's plenty of people who have tried and almost all of them have failed. The claim that you've made is that X factor once removed has no effect. And
I'm not saying it has no effect. I'm just saying we're talking in terms of degrees. When you say that all these people die a day, you know,
well, let me tell you what the degrees are, because it's actually pretty significant. All right.
Okay.
Keeping a firearm in the home increases the risk of suicide by a factor of 3 to 5 and increases the risk of a suicide with a firearm by a factor of 17. Yeah. So again, when it comes to that determined nature, it means that someone who doesn't have an access to a firearm in their home is 17 times less likely to use it. In fact, by the way, this is all BradyCampaign.org, risks of having a gun in the home for those. And again, I'm going to put all these out there, but.
And I'm not denying that. I am fully aware of the, you know, by being a gun owner, you are increasing the likelihood that a domestic dispute within the household will lead to a murder. You are increasing.
No, these are suicide statistics.
Or suicide. You know, in both cases, I understand that, you know, owning a gun will certainly increase the likelihoods, you know, of those things happening. And,
not,
you know, in some cases,
would not decrease the sign of those things happening.
No, I'm not saying that at all. In fact, I said that it would decrease it. But again, we're talking in terms of degree. It's not going to stop all the suicides that, you know, all right. So if 89 people,
all of them. I'm telling you that there's a risk factor of 3 to 5 in the country right now, according to the statistics that we have. That's 3 to 5 times the amount. That's not just a degree. That's a magnitude. You know, that's a huge degree.
Wait, a 3 to 5. Say that again.
Yeah. So keeping a firearm in the home increases the risk of suicide by a factor of 3 to 5, and increasing the risk of suicide with a firearm, and increases the risk of suicide with a firearm by a factor of 17. The association between firearm ownership and increased risk of suicide can't be explained by higher risk of psychiatric disorders in homes with guns. I mean, they've really disproven a lot of those other factors that we tend to go for. So what I'm telling you is what the facts bear out, what the statistics bear out, is that you're 3 to 5 times more likely to kill yourself if you have a gun in your home. So it's not a small degree. It's not.
No, I understand that, but we're going back to the argument that banning guns in favor of reducing public safety deaths by a matter, you know, by some, you know, margin or by some degree is what we're talking about here. And if you're making the case that we should ban guns across the country because people who willingly buy them might be more likely to kill themselves, I don't think that's a really good argument for restricting that freedom to own a weapon.
No. So the claim that I'm making is not that people who buy guns will kill themselves. The claim
or
that
are
I
more
make,
likely that, you know, that's what I mean.
Well, that's just true. So that's,
no, that
that's
is true, and I'm not denying that.
By a
but
factor
if you're
of three
if you're gonna
five.
Use if you're gonna use that as a rationale for banning weapons across the country, I don't see how that's good. I mean, people who smoke are, you know, much more likely to die of health complications, but I'm not going to go out and ban cigarettes because of that.
Okay, so but we do put – so that's a different thing because the difference also is because of the nature of cigarettes. Also, it has to do with how we control cigarettes. We also put a bunch of controls in cigarettes. That's not actually
yeah,
quite
sure.
A defensive
and I don't mind putting – you know, slapping a warning label on guns right. That say you are, you know, 3 to 5 times more likely to commit suicide by purchasing that.
So just to clarify, Travis, are you coming from a point of because they're making the choice to end their lives? Like because it's something they're – is that what your point is? I'm trying to just make sure I understand.
No. My point is that – so his base premise is that we should ban guns across the country or, you know, restrict them in such a way that it's basically impossible for people to own them outside of, you know, government organizations. That one of the rationales for that is because people are more likely to successfully commit suicide by owning these things. And I don't think that's a rational.
Well, I'm trying to figure out why you don't think, because like someone like me listening, that sounds rational. I mean, that there's a lot of people who are dying because of this thing. Therefore,
they are more likely to die because of the gun.
In this example, we're specifically talking about harm to oneself by owning that thing. It's like saying, if I smoke cigarettes, I am, you know, way more likely to die of cancer now. But that is something that I accept and do.
But that's your choice. That's what I was trying to get at. So it's because you're saying,
if I own a handgun and I am 3 to 5 times more likely to kill myself because of owning that handgun, that is a risk that I am assuming to myself.
Okay, yeah, that's what I was trying to clarify. Sorry, go ahead.
Okay, so you're not saying that people who don't own guns are as likely to kill themselves as gun owners.
No,
you're
I'm
saying
not
that
saying that at
people
all.
Have
people
a right to kill themselves.
Yeah, people who own guns are more likely to kill themselves. That is a fact. That is not something I'm disputing, but I don't see that as a reason or a justification, you know, even in a subsect of justification for banning guns.
From a libertarian perspective, if people want to kill themselves with guns, they have the right to kill themselves with guns. And the fact that people kill themselves with guns, just as we allow people to smoke, people should be allowed to own guns, even though it means that their suicide factor goes up by 3 to 5.
Yeah, that would be argument.
So that's a suicide argument, right? But homicide, it also goes up a tremendous amount as well. Now, homicide crosses into the rights of other people. So knowing that the statistics
hang on. Can I stop you there for a second?
Sure.
So that's kind of a thought crime assumption a little bit there. Okay. So if I buy a gun and I accept the fact that I may be more inclined to do a homicide, if you're going to ban it on the presumption that by owning this, I'm going to go out and commit a murder, even if you're pointing to some kind of statistic, that's applying an assumption to something that's not happening, you know, or hasn't happened yet. You know, how is that any different from thought crime?
We do this. Well, it's very different from thought crime, but we do this for public safety all the time. You know, if there was a toaster that when used incorrectly, murdered the person trying to make the toast, we would control the toaster and we would all agree that it was a good idea not to sell that toaster anymore or to make that toaster incredibly limitedly available.
right, that does it for part one. Sorry for the awkward cutoff there, but that's sometimes how it goes. I'd like to remind you, if you want to hear part two right away, I released the full audio along with some comments afterwards by me to the patrons. So that's on patreon.com. It's on the premium feed. Check that out. If you want to go to patreon.com/atheist, you can get it right away. If not, no hard feelings. I understand it. Not everyone can pledge. No problem. You'll get the rest of it Thursday, and I hope you enjoy. So that's it for me for today. I'll see you guys either right away or on Thursday for part two.